This means that Donald Trump will be the 45th president of the United States.
This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
Hi, and welcome to the 45th podcast. Listeners, Robbie Chaudhry here. I'm so happy to be back, and I'm here with my co-host, Susan Simpson. Hey, Susan.
Hey, Robbie. Glad you're back in the U.S.
Yeah, actually, you know what? I said I'm so happy to be back. I'm happy to be back doing the podcast with you, but otherwise, I'm not so sure. I was in Switzerland, people.
I'm just going to stay there with the cows.
Yeah, and the cows and the beautiful weather, because why is D.C. like a portal to hell has opened up since I got here, at least.
I think the way Rebecca LeBoy put it, and she was talking about New Hampshire, but still applies here, it's like living in a dog's mouth.
In a dog's mouth. Dogs are so sweet. But yeah, that seems about right. I've never been that close, but I can imagine. For the 2 weeks I was gone, I tried not to think about this man. It was great. It was so good.
Forgot about America and what was going on. And
yep. And you know what? Can I tell you, for the last 2 days, I kid you not, I have spent at least 2 hours in the last 2 days looking for properties to rent or buy in Pakistan. I don't know what's happening to me, but there's a part of me, I think, that's like, I just want to get out. I just want to get out.
Just leave.
Just get up and leave. But I'm just browsing right now, but I did download the app. So the property app. So it's a commitment. So, okay. Tell me what I missed.
I mean, did you listen to last week's episode?
I listened to part of it as I was traveling back. And then I just said, no. And I shut it off. But I mean, when I got back, what was dominating news was John McCain's funeral. And actually, he passed away before I got back.
Manafort's trial was only like a week ago, and it feels like an age ago.
Wow. Yeah, that's right. So how did things work out?
There was a conviction. So that's good.
Right.
Honestly,
it's number of convictions, right?
Yes, on 8 of the 18 charges. And there looks like they're proceeding to trial in D.C. for the second set of charges here going on. I believe September 24th is the date that they presumably are going to go ahead with the trial. And that will have similar charges to last time, but more in the line of like money laundering and FARA violations, assuming he doesn't settle. Apparently, there were talks about a settlement that fell through. So we'll see how happens there. The big news.
Nice to hear that. I was just expecting that he's going to wait for the second trial, and then Trump's just going to give him a pardon, and that's the end of that.
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be like a pardon frenzy at some point. Just a question of when. But
just a question of when.
This week, the bigger news, I guess, dominating with the weekend and the week before, really, was McCain's funeral.
Yeah, I mean, it was like nonstop. It was a lot of coverage about the funeral, him lying, his remains lying in state at the Capitol Rotunda. Any of that?
Not really. it's just not my thing. I don't know. I'm not saying it shouldn't happen or have any objection to it, because I don't, but I'm also not that interested in it.
I got to say this. His funeral and memorial was upstaged just a little bit by the Aretha Franklin funeral the day before, which was a production. Amazing. It was a celebration. It was kind of crazy, but it was a pretty somber moment. Now, obviously we've known Senator McCain has been ill for a while, and then not long before he passed away, he'd announced that he's no longer going to be pursuing treatment. And I think at that point, everybody knew that it was he was going to pass away. Yeah, close to the end. But eyes were on the White House, and he passed away late last Saturday evening. And I think the next morning there was a tweet by Trump, and the tweet was kind of sterile, you know, didn't say anything nice about him. And then it just kind of went downhill there.
he blocked this White House issuing a statement calling McCain a hero. He only allowed condolences for the family to be issued. And then like at midnight, the very second they could legally like raise the flag back from half staff, they did.
He raised it.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was apparently an outcry from like veterans organizations. And so they lowered it again, but he really didn't want to do that. I mean, like McCain did not want him at the funeral. And so, so he wasn't at this funeral. And, he also, on the day of the funeral and the day of the memorial, did not say a word. He tweeted frenetically, crazy. I mean, it just seemed like speech after speech after speech was directed towards Trump.
It seems like that, I guess. But it also, at the same time, it kind of reminded me of seeing the reactions of everyone. Reminded me of the Super Bowl right after the election, when all the ads, which have been in place for months and months, long before the election, actually we knew what was going to happen, And it was just basically statements about like American goodness, Americans coming together and, you know, American values. And it seemed everyone interpreted it as an attack on Trump. When one, it couldn't be because all those ads were in place before Trump won. And two, literally, they were just statements like talking about like Americans coming together. And that was enough to be considered an attack on the president.
I agree with you. I mean, that's kind of telling that anything nice about America sounds like an attack on the president. But I will say that Meghan McCain, Senator McCain's daughter, her remarks to me were pretty pointedly at the president. So let's take a listen.
We gather here to mourn the passing of American greatness. The real thing, not cheap rhetoric from men who will never come near the sacrifice he gave so willingly, nor the opportunistic appropriation of those who live lives of comfort and privilege while he suffered and served. The America of John McCain is generous and welcoming and bold. She is resourceful and confident and secure. She meets her responsibilities. She speaks quietly because she is strong. America does not boast because she has no need to. The America of John McCain has no need to be made great again because America was always great.
Obviously, her line where she says, America has always been great. We don't need to make America great. That is a direct attack on the president. And also other things she said, I think it was pretty clear. Now, Ivanka and Jared were there. They're the only ones, I think, from the family who attended. There were senior administration officials also present. Although people were really snarky about that, you know, Ivanka was texting as Meghan McCain was doing whatever. I thought at least it showed some human decency.
Well,
I mean,
did you see where they were apparently complaining about the fact that they didn't get good seats for the funeral?
Oh, no, I didn't see that. Shit, I have to take it back now. No, I didn't know that. But again, they didn't know that going there, what kind of seats they were going to get. At least they showed up. And I was kind of actually surprised that Melania didn't show up. I really thought, like Barbara Bush's funeral, fine, Trump's not going to show up, but that Melania would.
She might not have been invited.
Maybe, but I'm guessing... Yeah, but I'm guessing if she had passed on word, she'd wanted to be there then. Anyhow, but the other part to watch for all of this was actually what I was really fascinated about was a lot of the reactions online to the funeral, which on one hand, you had a lot of people very upset that McCain was being lionized, that he was being turned into something he wasn't, that just because he's a, you know, a smidge better or he's, you know, a more honorable person than Trump, which is a low bar. That he deserves the kinds of accolades and also the fact that people were watching this memorial service and saying, see, this is like a bipartisan rebuke of the president. This is like everybody's showing him you're on the outside and we're all together. I thought that was kind of bullshit.
I mean, that's why I don't like funerals in general, obviously, but like I didn't really care about this and want to watch. I mean, sure, it's nice to have a fading moment of bipartisanship, sort of. But all it is like, if you can't even say the words that you're protesting authoritarian leader, it doesn't matter if you go to a funeral and have some, you know, possibly veiled language calling him out. I mean, no one's doing anything about it. So it doesn't matter what kind of veiled funeral references you want to make. It doesn't matter.
Maybe. Yeah, I agree there. Maybe what it was that was making people feel better was seeing a sense of like something that's like statements like, you know what I mean? Like people are like acting the part, which this president refuses to do. He just won't ever act the part. He wholesale rejects what the office of the presidency, you know, demands of him. And I think seeing people act the way you expect, you know, former presidents to act and form, you know, that's what it was. It was like, oh, OK, you know, this is how what leadership should look like, even if it's a lot of just empty rhetoric.
So we're just nostalgic for politics before they went insane.
What was also. Yeah, I think we all are. We like to see, you know, it just makes us feel like maybe there's a chance we can still get back there. But then we are reminded that maybe not, because simultaneously online, the social media reaction from right wingers, Trumpers, was pretty disgusting. They were pretty disrespectful to McCain. Ann Coulter said something really disrespectful. I was pretty amazed that they've gotten to the point where they're literally attacking a man from their own party who served this country for a very long time, for better or worse, during his funeral. So they brought us back to reality, I guess.
Yeah. All right. I have mixed feelings about all of it. I just think that it's all pomp and circumstance and theater and less than until some Republicans are willing to actually do something about what's happening. I mean, McCain was the only one who was willing to do anything. And when I say anything, I mean like anything. Low bar there.
Right.
Like he was being celebrated as like a focal point for people who are upset about the current state of American politics because he is like the only one who did shit and he barely did anything at all. So,
well, Jeff Flake likes to talk a lot.
So does Sass. And they don't do anything. It doesn't mean anything. I mean, right now, Republicans, even the ones who don't like Trump, want what's happening to happen in America. I mean, overall, they prefer this to the alternative. They would probably want a different version of this. They could have it, but they can't. So they will take this and run with it.
Trump has a 90% approval rating right now with the Republicans. And you know what John McCain had when he died? Only a 41% approval rating. So, yeah, I guess, you know, much of the GOP is fine with what's going on and also are the voters. Conservative voters. So, going back to McCain,
the one point is, guess who else?
Go ahead.
Who else was not at the funeral? Palin.
Sarah Palin. Yep.
Yep.
Sarah Palin.
I would like to think that he had regrets about that, and he's indicated he did.
Yeah, I think he did. I also think. I mean, look, the buck did stop with him. At the same time, I'm not going to give him a pass for it. Yeah, the fact that he didn't vet her, or the fact that as things were happening, he didn't say, "Wait a minute, I made a mistake. We need to replace this." I'm not gonna. He just went with it.
He wanted a populist, like a proto McCain, proto Trump, and he got it.
He did.
He sought that out. He may not have realized what he was doing, or not realized all the ramifications, but like that was intentional.
No, it was intentional, and he legitimized the Tea Party. He legitimized this faction of the GOP, and I totally think he has a lot of responsibility for where we are today by bringing that into the political mainstream. He does so,
but he did the bare minimum in objecting to Trump. So, yay!
He's a rebel, maverick.
Rest in peace for sure. I'm not trying to. Yeah. I mean, I think McCain obviously has a complicated legacy, but I don't subscribe to the school of thought that he's, you know, as bad as all the rest or somehow someone should be condemned. Not at all. His legacy speaks for itself. But if he is the best the Republicans have to oppose what's happening right now, then we're screwed.
Oh, they're fucked. They're fucked.
We are too.
You know what's interesting is Palin gave an interview, I think about a week or two ago, where they asked her about John McCain after he made the announcement that he wasn't going to be continuing therapy or treatment. And she said that she didn't say anything about him other than, you know, it seems like he's surrounded by the wrong advisors. And I was thinking that's exactly what happened back when he was running, is he was really surrounded by the wrong advisors. And then he didn't do anything to course correct.
So it's not that I don't like shopping. It's just that, I don't like it. And also it's hard and time consuming. And but I like having nice clothes. I'm a big fan of that. I just don't like the process it takes to get them. Now there's a way to fix all that. It's called Stitch Fix.
So Stitch Fix is this online personal styling service. And I got to say, you know, I was a little bit, when I first heard about it, I was a little bit skeptical, especially because, you know, I look at you, Susan, you're like tall, you're like built like, you know, like you should be walking down a runway. So I'm like, she's got to have no problem finding clothing. But I'm sure all of us have our unique issues. And I always have had issues finding clothing that I feel like fits me well, flatters me, and that people understand, like, you know, what my body needs to be wearing. But yeah. They have this amazing tool on Stitch Fix where you go and you go through the entire thing. You explain, these are the styles I like. This is the sizes that are comfortable. And I actually had fun because I kept picking pictures. I'm like, no, I wouldn't wear that. Yes, I would wear that. Yes, I would. Like, and I cannot wait to get my first Stitch Fix box because I feel like I'm finally going to get a box with clothing that is going to fit right and look good.
Yeah. And you can ask for you give them ideas of what you wear and what you don't. And your problems. Like, for me, I have freakish shoulders and a really long torso, so I can't wear normal human jackets. Or I do the whole scene from fat man in a little jacket and split them all open. So shopping is a pain in the ass. But
I'm telling you, there's a runway out there calling your name, Susan.
What typically you do though is you ask for clothes that you think fit you, and tell them what kind of style you want to go for. And if you don't know how to be bold or how to kind of expand your style, they can do it for you.
I actually added some things that I normally probably wouldn't try, but I thought, you know what? It's going to come to my house. There's no subscription required. I don't have to keep any of the pieces. There's no risk here. I'm just going to try it on. And if I don't want it, it comes right to my door. I can send it right back from my door. And that's what I love about this. And their styling fee is only $20. So
for me, it was do you want to wear bohemian clothes? I'm like, I don't know. Do I? Let's give it a go.
Let's give it a go. I'd love to see you in some bohemian stuff. I love that stuff.
Well, find out soon.
Right now, our listeners can start it at stitchfix.com/45th to get 25% off if you keep all five items in your box. So give it a try, and maybe you could look like bohemians like me and Susan. That's stitchfix.com/45th to get started today. Once again, stitchfix.com/45th.
So, we also had an update this week in the Mueller investigation, a surprise indictment. If anyone had this person on their fantasy indictment league, good job.
That's a thing?
It yeah, is. That's what Mueller She Wrote has for their Patreon.
That's awesome.
But I would be shocked if anyone had Patton on their list. And if they did, like, seriously, you're psychic. Because he is as I mentioned on Twitter, it's like a Mad Libs of modern politics, because this guy worked for Cambridge Analytica, is connected to Kilimnik, who is the Russian GRU dude associated with Manafort, and he was indicted for funneling foreign money into Trump's inaugural committee.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, all the best of right there.
I missed that.
Yeah. And it's not like earth-shattering necessarily, and if people are looking for earth-shattering indictments, probably gonna be disappointed here, but it just shows the breadth of the investigations currently going on and right. How overlapping all these layers of corruption really are. What Sam Patton was doing he was basically not vigilante, more like a mercenary political thug for hire. He was out there doing foreign business leader and foreign political leader dirty work. Just like Manafort was, really.
Yeah. It's amazing that this administration did not wait to even get into office before they started selling off their souls. I mean, like, for the inauguration fund, I mean, that's what you're saying? Like, even before he took office, basically.
There are a lot of unanswered questions there about what they did with the money, how they got it. I suspect that this is not the end of indictments related to the inaugural fund.
Well, if it seems like Mueller is lining them all up, I mean, there's got to be a strategic order to all of this, right? Like, there he's building, he's going to build upon. I mean, he can build upon these cases, right?
Yeah, I mean, my guess is the strategy here and the order is primarily who can he indict without causing the whole chain of dominoes to fall. Mm. So, please don't let those dominoes start to fall next week, because I'll be out of town on vacation, and I really, really, really want to not think about the news at all. So.
I think you're good. I think we have a little more time. Yeah. I don't think it's going to happen that quickly. I think when it happens, it's going to be with great finality, and it's going to take a little more time. But I'm hoping at least. So moving on, I wanted to talk about excerpts from Bob Woodward's upcoming book, which is going to be published on September 11th. So it's not far from now, but you know, folks, media, they've gotten advanced copies, and today in all the major publications, they've written about the book, and it's pretty shocking stuff.
Yeah. So before we get into that, if you're on Twitter, you probably saw a tweet recently. In March of 2013, Trump tweeted out, "Only the Obama White House can get away with attacking Bob Woodward."
Okay. You're kidding me. There is always a tweet. That's amazing. Now, Bob Woodward, just to remind folks, he is the one who wrote the book, the Watergate book, right? Like, he broke that scandal wide open.
Him and Bernstein are the duo from Deep Throat and all that.
Yeah. And he's back. This guy is credible as all hell. Did he write an Obama book too?
Oh, I did not know that. A book on every president, I think.
Every president? Okay.
Yeah, he never went anywhere. Don't call it a comeback.
Okay. I won't call it a comeback. So the point is, this guy's not just got history, but he's highly credible. I mean, like, he's a very, very highly respected journalist. And I don't think Trump's tweeted yet about him and the revelations that have come out today.
Have you been online in the past 3 hours?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
Crap, really?
He's tweeted a ton about that, so.
Oh, shit, really?
Oh, yeah. Your outline's out of date, Rabia.
I just did it this morning.
So we'll get to that in a second, but let's go to, like, the big, I mean, some of these, the big ones, quote unquote, are really not that big. It's stuff like John Kelly calling Trump an idiot and unhinged, or Mattis saying that he has the understanding of the fifth or sixth grader. Like, this is all old news. Like, we all heard.
That's old news.
Yeah. Like,
I think we know he's surrounded by people who think he's a complete moron. We know that. I think two of the most shocking things that I've read so far. Number one is that his aides regularly, apparently, and staff members, like, they have to hide things from him in order to, like, literally protect national security. And I thought this was kind of just crazy. Like, they have to, there's one anecdote in which, and I can't remember which staffer saw a memo on Trump's desk, and the memo, and I don't know who it was written by, but I'm just going to go ahead and guess Steve Miller, or basically recommending that, Trump pull out of some South Korean, treaty, that like a joint military exercise treaty or something like that. But doing that basically would mean that it would make the United States vulnerable to North Korean, like, missile attacks, because we would no longer be part of the system that would alert us to those attacks. So whoever the staffer was saw this memo, hid it from the president, so he wouldn't sign off on it. This is how they're working things, is like, they see something, they think Trump's going to be like, that's a great idea, sign off on it, and really, really hurt this country. So
we are in danger every moment of every day. I know it's felt a bit, you know, we've had a status quo going. Things have felt not stable necessarily, but like understandable. Like, we know the chaos, we know what to predict out of it. It's all an illusion. Like, there is no one in charge of this nonsense. There's no one in charge of this madness. And it could all fall apart at any second.
It won't. Yeah, it wouldn't take a lot for this guy to do something that would be catastrophic to a lot of Americans and maybe people in other parts of the world. Another part that I thought was really just hilarious, but also kind of crazy, was that Trump apparently, you know, has been insisting that he wants to sit down with Mueller. He thinks he can do this interview. He thinks he'll be okay. And so they tried this. I think Dowd sat down with him, his attorney. Trump totally failed, right? And then Dowd and Jay Sekulow, went to Mueller. They actually went to Mueller and said, he can't do this. They're like, they reenacted the mock interview to the special counsel and said he can't do this because he's incapable of telling the truth.
That is by far the most insane part of it. I mean, I know, like, objectively,
that is.
I mean, there's stuff about Trump that's, like, probably scarier, but that's just, like, flat out insane. I don't understand how any attorney could do that, why any attorney would do that. I don't understand. It's unfathomable why that would happen. Other than the fact that his attorneys are desperate and they had no other answers to give. It could explain why today, apparently, Mueller has offered to accept some answers in writing instead of an interview with him. Because, like, honestly, if you have the guy's own attorneys telling you that he's incapable of telling the truth.
I mean, but here's the thing, though. If that's the case, the last thing Mueller should do is say, okay, then just give it to me in writing. He should be like, no, I definitely want to sit down with this guy. I mean, he should double down on that. He should be like, and you know what? He should, like, bait him into it. Bait Trump. Trump will take the bait.
I mean, he's not going to. He never really wanted to do it. He's been lying the whole time about wanting to do this.
It sounds like he was arguing with his own lawyers about it.
Trump does that. Trump's told how he is. He never really wanted to do it because he knows he wouldn't survive it. Besides, like, his own advice to Clinton back in the day was like, whatever you do, don't sit down and give an interview.
But I do think he's gone downhill since then. I feel like his cognitive abilities have suffered since the Clinton era.
The real question, though, is if Mueller wants to do a subpoena. Because that's kind of what it comes down to. Either accept written answers or have some kind of compromise, or go ahead and have a subpoena fight, which Mueller seems lately to not be that interested in engaging in. But also the bigger problem here is if a president is unwilling to explain something, that's even just talk to counsel about a threat to national security and to, you know, American sovereignty, that's a problem.
Are you going to read the book?
Yeah, I did end up reading Fire and Fury. Against my better wishes.
Oh, you did?
Oh, yeah. It was dumb. but this is a real one, and I will definitely read this book.
Yeah, I think this will be a real one, too. September 11th, folks.
What we've seen so far is not all of it, but, like, it is scary. It's very concerning, and it's probably good.
Well, you know, General Mattis already has put out a statement saying that, like, I didn't say what he said I said, you know, and I'm pretty sure Mattis is lying.
Well, one thing that is interesting to me is that one of the statements that's in the book is that Trump mocked Sessions' accent, called him mentally retarded right. and a dumb Southerner, and that he couldn't even be a one-person county lawyer down in Alabama. So Georgia senators are, I saw Isaacs in anyway, his reaction was an assumption it was true. Like, they are not mm-hmm. actually even pretending that this didn't happen. They all know what happened. They all know it's true. And they are not even, like, I mean, they're making, not attacking Trump for it. They're just saying, like, we don't believe that's an accurate description of the fine former Senator Sessions.
Right. And it's inappropriate, right? That's an inappropriate comment. I mean, Trump is just going to say it didn't happen. I never said that.
Shithole countries.
Yeah.
And his people are going to lie for him. So what we have so far is that the tweet storm you missed earlier was him tweeting out comments from, like, Mattis, like you mentioned, pushed back against it. Mattis, I believe, is probably just lying. It wouldn't be the first time. He has definitely sold his soul for his administration. And apparently he's already been in the outs for a while anyway, so.
Well, here's the thing, though. I would think anybody would be inclined to believe what he said about Sessions because of what he has been saying about Sessions. Until now, it hasn't been as direct, but he has been directly attacking Sessions now publicly. I mean, he tweeted about it just, I think, over the weekend or, I don't know, not too long ago, where he was this, and it was the weirdest tweet, too, where he was berating him for basically prosecuting two Republican congressmen, saying that it's going to hurt the midterm elections. He's going after him.
And that was hands down. I know this is a high bar. That was hands down the most terrifying batshit tweet of his whole administration. Mm. Even more so than the one where he called Little Rocket Man or the one where he threatened Iran in all caps for no discernible reason. Because that one is an open, like, there is no way around it. There's no, like, oh, he's just talking. That is literally an attack on the rule of law in America. It's a statement he does not support it. He does not believe in rule of law. He prefers the DOJ to act as a political organ for the GOP.
Right.
Literally, Nixon went down for less. Right. Nixon went down for much less. The tapes that they found of him that caused him to resign are a fraction as bad as this is. And he's doing it in the open. And the Republicans are, I mean, Flake gave like a pretty little speech today on the floor. And that was it.
Well, the thing is, he's, you know, when I saw that tweet, I thought, I don't think he understands how any of this works. Mm-hmm. That was what he thinks that he is running like a mafia. He is running a Trump organization like entity. He doesn't have any understanding of how the rule of law works, how the separation of power works, how democracy, none of this, because you can't understand it and tweet something so blatantly unethical.
He's running a dictatorship. He knows how to do that. Yeah. He knows what he's doing. He knows how to run a country as a dictator, and he's trying to make that happen. Let's just read this tweet because this one is really, really scary. Two long-running Obama-era investigations of two very popular Republican congressmen were brought to a well-publicized charge just ahead of the midterms by the Jeff Sessions Justice Department. That's kind of the Jeff Sessions Justice Department. At least justice is no longer in scare quotes. The tweet goes on, two easy wins now in doubt because there's not enough time. Good job, Jeff. The Democrats, none of whom voted for Jeff Sessions, must love him now. Same thing with Lion James Comey. The Dems all hated him, wanted him out, thought he was disgusting, until I fired him. Immediately, he became a wonderful man, a saint-like figure, in fact. Really sick. We have a lot of problems here. just for starters, this whole idea that it was two long-running Obama-era investigations, no. One of them started, like, late 2016 and actually got kicked off when Trump was in office. The other's about events.
Who are the two congressmen here?
Oh, so they are coincidentally the first two congressmen to endorse Trump. Duncan Hunter, the steam congressman, mm-hmm. and the guy who was insider trading. Help me out.
Both of these investigations are for like kind of financial Duncan Hunter is for campaign finance, right?
The other one's for insider trading when he was doing on the lawn of the White House while Trump wasn't president. So it's for acts that happened definitely during the Trump administration. So Trump is like just actually wrong about all of this. Second, like honestly, those two prosecutions were a credit to the current DOJ. They show that they are not fully politically corrupted by this administration and they're doing their job the way they should do it. At all times. And of course, Trump was not a fan of that. And third, last of all, ain't gonna be no Comey thing here. Trust me. Democrats are never going to celebrate or make a saint-like figure out of Jeff Sessions.
Yeah. Well, at this point, nobody is. Because, I mean, the GOP has been, I mean, not the GOP, but the GOP has been pretty silent, I think, on these, about these attacks. But the right-wing media, I'm saying right-wing, but I'm talking about like Fox, Jeanine Pirro. I can't even remember. I'm blanking on the name.
Pirro wants the job. Oh my God. She totally wants the job.
Maybe Pirro wants to do the job, but I mean, there are blatant, it's just like a open attack. And, you know, Trump is like brainwashed by these people every single day when he watches it. And basically they're talking to him. So they're saying fire sessions, fire sessions, fire sessions. And I think Trump is hoping if he humiliates him enough, he'll step down. And I don't think Sessions is going to step down ever unless he's fired.
Sessions is too stubborn. He gave up the Alabama Senate seat and then it was lost to the Democrats. He ain't going anywhere until he's forced to go somewhere.
Yeah. And in the meantime, he's going to, you think it's happening? It's going to happen.
I mean, you missed Lindsey Graham saying that it was fine after the election. As long as it was after the midterms, it's cool.
Excuse me? I did miss that.
Yeah. No. Lindsey Graham is
he's special. He's something else.
Here's a strategy right now. The only way they can survive these investigations, the only way the GOP and Trump will make it out of this alive, the midterms, they have to win and enough to be able to consolidate power and stop the investigations. Their strategy is not political. It's not factual. It's power-based. It's the only thing they've got going for them.
They do not care about the crimes. They do not care about corruption. And in fact, wasn't there a report that the GOP was circulating a memo about these are all the investigations that could potentially happen if the Democrats take the House?
Yes. And they were all the things that should be investigating right now.
Right. Regardless.
I mean, it cannot be overstated how much the GOP has abdicated to Trump and to corruption. Their only concern now is not letting that corruption cause them to lose power, which sounds dire. But obviously, we have a president who is openly attacking the media every day, calling for their license to be taken away, like this morning's tweets. We have a president who was actively seeking to have the DOJ become a political weapon in the hands of the GOP. Every authoritarian thing that could happen is happening right now, and they are not saying anything.
Speaking of authoritarian attacks on Google, I was kind of shocked to see what's been happening around the social media stuff. Have you been following this story?
Yeah, and how Fox News is arguing that we should, like, nationalize and, like, take over Google and other tech companies and Facebook and all that. Yeah.
So, I mean, Trump told reporters in the Oval Office last week that Google, Facebook, and Twitter, quote, better be careful, saying the three technology companies are treading on very, very troubled territory. He thinks that they are biased. The White House attempted to start this sad hashtag, Stop the Bias, didn't really work. But this is not just Trump, you know, spouting off. This is becoming a thing. His top economic advisor, Larry Kudlow, said that the White House is, quote, taking a look at whether Google should be regulated by the government.
I hope it's not a thing. I still maintain some hope it's not actually a thing in that sense, that it's just an attempt to sort of bully and cause Google and other tech companies to self-regulate in a way that favors right-wing conservative causes, and that they don't actually plan to do anything about it. I don't feel confident about that. I'm not going to say I think that's definitely what's going on here, but I'm hopeful that's all it is.
Well, Orrin Hatch wrote a letter to the FTC asking it to reconsider the competitive effects of Google's conduct in search and digital advertising. I feel like they're taking this shit kind of seriously. And even if they don't take measures to actually step in and try to regulate this, which I don't even understand how that could. Well, I want to say, I don't know, how could that survive legal scrutiny? But hello, I know where we are today.
Before. But now we're going to have, well, we'll get to that later. But we're going to have Supreme Court
It could happen. But even if the outcome is that they just self-regulate, that's also skewing, you know, the natural order of things here. I mean, Google search results are based on an algorithm that is not manipulated by them. It's fueled by how people search stuff, right?
Yeah.
And view stuff and share stuff.
The Republican Party has made a call. They cannot win through democracy, so they're not going to.
Thuggery.
I mean, it's like after Romney, or when they had like their postmortem, they're like, we need a bigger tent. I mean, obviously, white men are not going to be enough of a voter base anymore. And their reaction was, no, we're going to just only go for the white men now, primarily. And then we're going to make up for it by undermining democracy itself.
All right. Well, these are all really terrible things.
It's dark. It's super dark. And there's nothing.
It's pretty dark.
There's no way out of it because we're just watching. We're watching it happen in real time.
I mean, the midterms. I mean, look, the primaries.
Everything comes down to this.
everything comes down to the midterms. And, you know, there are some good signs, you know, from the primary so far. But, God, I don't know. I feel like it could go either way.
It's not, it's not just democracy, because Democrats, in order to take back power, have to win way more than 50%. It's not like 50 plus one here. It's like a substantial margin in order to get power.
It is.
Whereas Republicans could take back power if they get 49% of the vote.
Right. Right.
It's scary. Like, okay. There's no point in like pretending it's not, because I mean, it's ignoring the evidence of your eyes and ears, what's going on right now. And it's not pleasant to think about, and it sounds like you're being hysterical, but you're not if you're concerned right now, because what we're seeing is how a dictator comes into power.
So, Susan, do you and your husband have the same sleeping needs in terms of your mattress?
No, because he likes ridiculously hard mattresses, so no.
Oh, does he? See, he's like me. I like my mattress almost so hard that it feels like the floor. Whereas my husband likes...
Why would
you do that? I don't know. It just makes my back feel better. But my husband wants like to sink into like feather pillow-ish type of comfort. So this can be problematic.
Fall back into.
I cannot sleep in that. But this is a problem. This is a problem when you have couples who are trying to sleep in the same mattress on the same bed, and they both are like, one of them is always going to be uncomfortable. However, there is now a solution to this.
Helix Sleep built a sleep quiz. It takes 2 minutes to complete, and they use the answers to match your body type and sleep preferences to the perfect mattress. So whether you're a side sleeper, checkmate me, hot sleeper, like a plush or firm bed, with Helix, there's no more guessing or confusion. Yes. So just go to helixsleep.com/45th and take their 2 minute sleep quiz, and they'll match you to a mattress that will actually get you the best sleep of your life.
It'll give you the best sleep because for couples, they can split the mattress down the middle, and then you get individual support needs and different preferences for each side. You can both customize how you want your mattress to be, which is amazing. And they have a 10-year warranty. You get to try it out for 100 nights risk-free. 100 nights, you get to sleep on it.
But Rabia, can it fix your cat smothering you in your sleep? I need that mattress.
The cat gets its own side, or the cat gets its own mattress. I think that's the way to do it. Well, right now, I think Helix has a great offer for our listeners, so why don't you tell them about it?
So right now, Helix is offering up to $125 off all mattress orders. You can get $125 off at helixsleep.com/45th. That's helixsleep.com/45th for $125 off your mattress order. helixsleep.com/45th.
I mean, do you think it's possible, maybe it's this hopeful wishful thinking, that once the GOP gets, you know, their Supreme Court in place, which, you know, is going to have more impact than any of this, like forever and ever, amen, that they'll finally be like, okay, enough of you, Trump. Like, now we're done with you.
No. Power wants more power. There's not like enough power to make them happy. They want more power. They can get it this way.
Well, maybe the other thing that could happen is he's already crazy, but maybe he could like stark raving mad and just like run naked across the White House lawn. And then they'll finally do something. I don't know. But here's the thing, though. Coming what's happening up. Now is this evolution of how they're even defending things. So, you know, he says witch hunt. Then he's calling into question right now. He started calling into question the actual authenticity of real evidence. Like, you know, what did he say about Lester Holt fudged that interview? Like, he fudged the audio of this interview that he did.
Today, he's doubled down the Access Hollywood, the grabbing by the pussy tape was fake.
What is he saying? He's saying it's fake.
It's fake.
Yeah,
and
this is the next
them.
Step. Yeah. But he didn't, because he won the election. That was his. So, yeah. So that is the next. And Jeanine Pirro is doing the same thing. She's saying that he's being framed. She actually is using that language. And, you know, as somebody who is a former prosecutor, like, I'm kind of amazed that she would go that far and make those kinds of allegations.
She's done crimes of Trump before, so it's no surprise. Campaign finance violations.
What?
Yeah, they go way back.
Yeah, that's true.
We now have a new exit from the White House. Well, several new exits from the White House. Actually, before that, back up. We have a bunch of exits from the White House because, like, I think two different people got caught being white nationalists. So they were out for that.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
God, there's so many. How did they even manage to get so many in one place? It's amazing.
It's almost like they sought them out.
Almost, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, who knew that, like, all these people in the White House were white supremacists? What a coincidence.
Yeah.
But Don McGahn is out. He was fired on Twitter.
On Twitter?
Yeah. Oh. And once Kavanaugh is confirmed, according to Trump's tweet, he'll be gone. Don McGahn was... apparently, there have not been good relations between him and Trump for a long time now, and he apparently has told Mueller everything, which is probably why they weren't in good terms. It's not clear yet who's going to replace him, but it'll probably be another bootlicking toady, only more so.
Bootlicking toady? Mm-hmm. I mean, he's got Giuliani for that. And then I was actually shocked to hear that the White House ethics lawyer resigned, because I did not know that there was a White House ethics lawyer.
Yeah. And did you see the resignation from the, I forget his title, but there was someone in the education department overseeing student loans, and he resigned saying that the administration was not doing its job to protect who was intended to protect, which is people receiving student loans. And he quit his job.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
I did not know that. Okay. I feel like at the end of the day, there are just going to be like just three people left running the entire country. Trump, Miller, and I don't know, Ivanka. I'm not sure who the third person will be, but
Ivanka's
maybe
not
Kelly.
Doing shit. Kelly might still be there. Although Kelly reportedly is on the outs too. I mean, it's all.
He's on the outs. I think Ivanka can't be on the outs. And Ivanka, what she does do is just travel around and represent different parts of the world.
So here's what it all comes down to, what everything has been about, and probably the reason we have Trump, actually definitely the reason we have Trump, and the reason everything is so horrible today, and that is the Supreme Court seat. Justice Kennedy stepped down, giving Trump an opening, and this is what they've been, Republicans have been after for, I guess, my entire lifetime, really. This is what they want. They want to make sure the court is in favor of their policy proposals, not representative of America as a whole by any means. They want to enshrine a very conservative religious viewpoint in American law through the Supreme Court, and they're now about to do so. And frankly, I am horrified because this is not going to be, I mean, Trump is going to be awful and it'll be a lifetime to fix it, but we could fix it. We can start making gains to get back as soon as he's out of office. Supreme Court's going to be there most of our lives. We are going to endure this. Our generation, basically, will have to endure what's going to happen next if Kavanaugh's confirmed.
Do you think, is it possible if the Democrats take back control of the legislature and the executive, that there would be a way to pass legislation to limit the lifetime appointment, like to limit the appointments of Supreme Court justices where it's no longer lifetime? Because I've always wondered about
that. Because it has to be constitutional, and there's no way we're going to get enough blue states for that to happen.
It requires a constitutional amendment,
I believe so,
to do that?
Actually,
is that in the Constitution? I don't think it is.
The Constitution provides for lifetime appointment, but it's not actually explicit. What the Constitution says is that Supreme Court justices can hold office during good behavior. And there's no requirement they resign or be put out of office. So there is no term limit, which means that they stay there forever, which basically means that impeachment is the only way to kick out a Supreme Court justice.
That would be tough to do.
Yeah.
That would be tough to do. It would take a lot to do that. Okay, go on.
Back
to the dread of today.
I mean, Kavanaugh is probably going to be confirmed. Let's not lie. He probably will be.
He's going to be confirmed.
No, it's not definite. If it was definite, they wouldn't be so panicked. It's probably, but it's not certain, because they know that they're in dicey water here. They know they could lose this opportunity. So they are trying to force it through as soon as possible.
In what scenario would he not be confirmed? Who would withhold, you know, confirmation? Like, I'm trying to figure out how is it not guaranteed?
It's almost guaranteed, but not necessarily. I mean, there's always, you have to fight. There's always a chance. I think Collins and Murkowski are both liars who are happy to see Roe v. Wade fall away.
Sure.
They may not be, like, again, might not be the first choice, but they're fine with it. They don't really care. So when they say that they're undecided, they're lying. They're definitely on board. Mm-hmm. I think there's a small, like, 5% chance that Flake could finally decide he's had enough of this and come through. I'm not holding out for it. I mean, I'm saying 90% likely that we're going to have Kavanaugh. But there's 10% chance that we're not. So you can't fold on 90% when the stakes are this high.
I mean, look, at the end of the day, let's say he's not confirmed. Trump will nominate somebody else just as problematic as Kavanaugh. If they get rid of Trump, then we're going to have
timing. You know? Timing. They have the precedent for a majority of the opposite party from the president blocking nomination for any SCOTUS nominee. They're not going to have time for hearings for a new nominee. So if Kavanaugh falls, we have the midterms. And Democrats take it back, ain't going to be a new Kavanaugh to replace him.
It's
a lot of ifs. But this is also, there's a real reason why blocking Kavanaugh would make a huge difference, because that means the seat's not getting filled unless the Democrats are totally horrible cowards who like roll over as soon as they get elected, which is definitely possible. So there's a lot of ifs. It's a huge, huge stream of ifs here. But here, like, there is a chance that Kavanaugh won't be. And here's the flip side of it, though. If he is confirmed, because of how they're doing it, because of how they're forcing this through without full documentation, they actually open up the chance for impeachment. More so than for Gorsuch, because Gorsuch was not as horrendous as this was. The way they're
Can we talk about why it's horrendous?
Because they're withholding all the documents and forcing it through for time reasons. I mean, it's not
so,
normal.
So the report is that 100,000 pages of documents that relate to Kavanaugh's time working in the Bush White House were withheld for, like, presidential privilege. I don't know what.
One knows, because they're claiming executive privilege, but no one's actually invoked it. It's, like, on letterhead from, like, an attorney saying that because of executive privilege, I'm not going to produce these documents. That's not how executive privilege works. Someone needs to invoke it, but no one has. So really, they're just not giving over documents because go fuck yourself.
These documents could be things like emails he sent, right? Communications. It could be, I mean, 100,000. But they have turned over, what, a couple hundred thousand pages?
Like 5%.
I think they're 150. What's that?
Like 5% of the total. 5 or 10%, I think.
Okay. And apparently they did a big document dump last night, the night before the hearings were to begin, like right, you know, in the middle of the night, so that Democrats couldn't actually get through the documents. And of course, Republicans aren't even looking at them, so whatever. So these documents could have, you think, potentially problematic stuff about Kavanaugh, more than we actually know about him?
Torture?
You think that's what it is?
I think it's torture, executive privilege, and like the ability to indict sitting president, and other stuff besides. I mean, Kavanaugh is... The big problem here is not just Kavanaugh by himself. I think there are real problems with Kavanaugh that are worth objecting to, independent of everything else going on right now in this moment in America. But the real threat is the fact that with him there, they could radically reshape America in a way that is not reflective of our current voter base. But Kavanaugh also has his own issues that need to be investigated. And even aside from the whole like Bush papers thing, I still have not seen any answers on those massive loans he took out, apparently for Nats tickets. Yeah.
Oh, right.
They never explained that. And the reason they've given don't seem right. So I think it's not just the documents being withheld that are worth exploring here. So, like, on a scale from 1 to 10, how much do y'all think me and Robbie love our cats? Just curious. Like, if you're not saying, like, 12 or 13, then follow us on Twitter and you'll get fixed on that.
We love our kitties.
A little bit too much, but it's okay. But the worst part about being a cat owner is dealing with cat litter, because it's messy and gross.
Oh, God. I hate it so much, Susan. I hate it so much. I can't even tell you.
Dude, like, that's probably being pregnant, or so I hear, is not having to deal with litter. It's a thing, right?
I admit making my children clean the cat litter. But here's the thing. I don't even like
being...
That's why I have children. As soon as
that's
you turn like eight,
now.
I'm like, you can do this. But I don't even like walking past the room where we have the cat litter. I can smell that. So I've even like thought about giving the cats away because I can't deal with the cat litter. But I'm not going to do that because we have a solution.
Yeah.
Tell us what it is.
Pretty litter. It's
Pretty litter.
Kitty litter 2.0. It comes right to your door. So you're not like lugging the giant like... Did you ever have like the big like carton thing? It's a like giant size one. I used to have those and they're a pain in the ass. You can't put them in grocery bags. They suck. Anyway, Pretty Litter is next level odor protection. It's super absorbent crystals that actually trap and conceal odors and moistures. So no smells and no mess. It's not clumping and it's not gross to clean.
We got two bags. We got two bags last week. First of all, it is actually quite pretty. And I have pictures of Mr. Beans checking out the bags. But
you took pictures? I couldn't
really
do it. I felt like I was
makes
invasive.
A difference. But, well, I have pictures of him just sniffing the bags. Yeah. I don't have pictures of him in the cat litter because I do respect his privacy like, in those moments. But Pretty Litter, here's the thing. Not only does it cut out the odor and it looks great and it's manageable because it is not in 1,000-pound bags, it even monitors your cat's health. And I thought this was really amazing. What it does is it'll change color to detect any kind of underlying illness before things get out of hand. So, you know, I mean, veterinary care is expensive. And if you can catch things early, it's better for your cat. It's better for your wallet. And Pretty Litter, this litter can actually help do that. It's amazing.
Yeah, I'll admit I was kind of nervous because I've got an old cat now. She's 16 or 17 and she's like a little bit decrepit and old, but I love her most of the time. And you know, like with older cats,
very old.
Kidney
very,
issue
very
is like an issue. So I was like, we put this litter in. I was like, oh my God, I don't want her to pee because I'm terrified what the color is going to be. It's all good. Checked out. But if you want like reassurance that there's not kidney problems that can be fixed quickly if they're caught in time, this is a really good solution.
Yep. do what Susan and I have done. Make the switch to Pretty Litter today. All you got to do is go to prettylitter.com and use the promo code 45th to get 20% off your first order. That's prettylitter.com, promo code 45th for 20% off. Finally, once again, prettylitter.com, promo code 45th. Have we talked about some of his positions and what people are worried about?
So the big one, I can't say the big one.
There's a bunch of big ones.
But the reason Trump probably picked him, because Kavanaugh was not always on this list of judges that, you know, Trump wanted. Like, he took this list from, like, the Federalist Society. Kavanaugh wasn't always on there. But Kavanaugh was added, I think, 2017. And Kavanaugh's probably most defining feature, at least compared to the rest of the people on that list, is that he believes that sitting president can't be touched, basically. That they're free to do what they want. He has a very expansive view of presidential immunity. And it's no goddamn coincidence that Trump picked him off that list. I mean, okay, there's also the fact that he, quote unquote, looks like Supreme Court justice, which influenced the decision, I'm sure. But Kavanaugh also would, on the court, would act to block any attempts to hold Trump accountable, which is undoubtedly appealing to Trump. Mm-hmm. But the bigger issue, the other big issue, is Roe v. Wade. Because he will overturn Roe v. Wade. Abortion will no longer be a right in America. And it's not going to stop at the state level. Like, that's their Trojan horse, is the claim. We just want to have states' rights. We want to have the ability to block it. No, that's not the game plan here. The game plan is to ban abortion on the federal level. And they will do it with Kavanaugh on the court.
Now, in 2006, when he was confirmed for the D.C. Court of Appeals, he said that he thought Roe v. Wade was binding, and that he would follow the ruling Supreme Court on it. But
that's because he's not in the Supreme Court then. All law is binding till it's not. And as a lower appellate court judge, he correctly said, I will apply even incorrect precedent, which is his job. But at the Supreme Court, he's free to. He will. Of course, he'll. Like, that's the elephant in the room. No one would. The only reason this is happening is because he'll overturn Roe v. Wade. He'll overturn gay marriage. He'll overturn everything that Kennedy helped make possible. It'll all be gone in a very short amount of time. And if he wouldn't take it away, the Republicans would not be fighting so hard for him right now.
It's, you know, I never thought I would see a time in my life that we would the potential to regress like that would be a possibility. Because I always felt on these issues, marriage equality, you know,
like we
abortion
have
rights.
Majority. I mean, we have a very strong majority. Electorally, these are questions are not in doubt. Electorally, this is established.
But even like even on like marriage equality, I really thought at this point, like, there is bipartisan support for marriage equality. I thought that's where we were. Have I been wrong this whole time? I really thought that the most, you know, most moderate conservatives support marriage equality. I thought most moderate conservatives support the right of a woman, especially in certain circumstances, right?
Like, you're not wrong, but it doesn't matter, because this is not electoral. This is not a Democratic issue. This is a conservative issue. Conservatives control who makes it through primaries. So it's a very conservative base here that's controlling an outsized share of both, like, the Republican Party and then the national legislature, because they have gerrymandered everything to hell. So what you have is a fragment of the population that is pushing through, like, life-changing policies that everyone else. Once they get it enshrined in constitutional law, I don't know how the hell we ever get out of it. It's bad. Like, it's really bad. Like, the future in America for the next 10 years is going to be awful if this goes through. If they get
What about gun rights? Where is he on the Second Amendment? I mean, I feel like I don't have to ask this, but
did you see what happened today at the Supreme Court?
Let's talk about the hearings. How were they and what happened?
The big moment, and I mean, well, we forgot, like, this is probably the most exciting Supreme Court nomination hearing ever, maybe? Okay, that's not true. Back in, like, the 1800s, early 1800s, there was some wild shit going on, so I'm sure there was more exciting stuff then. But, like, in terms of, like, our lifetimes and our parents' lifetimes, this is the most exciting Supreme Court hearing there's ever been. It started off with, like, protest up the wazoo and the Democrats trying to force a delay for time to read the documents. That never happens. It didn't happen for Gorsuch. It doesn't happen. Like, the way it's been dealt before, like, with Merrick Garland, which does not have hearings at all. So these were wild by Senate standards. The Democrats, apparently there was an internal debate about whether to walk out of the hearing. I am glad they chose not to do that, because that would have been pathetic and wouldn't have worked. They showed up and fought. So we'll see how long it lasts. Probably not long. It's the Democrats. But they fought today.
How far along are we in the hearing? What is this going to look like? How many more days are we
I believe it's just this week. So we have three more days. Today, I think it ended with him giving his like statement at the end of the day, because, you know, all senators have to come through and give their little say for a while. Flake did get up there and, you know, use the stage to talk about Trump's very concerning attacks on the rule of law, which is, you know, only a footnote to what's going on right now. This is how democracy dies. When there's so much chaos, you can't focus on the fact that they are openly destroying democracy in front of you. So
when do we expect him to be confirmed by? Because really, that's
Monday. I don't know.
Really?
We'll see. Nothing is in stone. There is always a chance. Like 10% is not great odds, chance. But it is odds. And like the stakes could not be higher. So yeah. It's worth fighting for. And until... until you know, the final I wondered about blown, it keep fighting.
Justice Kennedy, when he stepped down, I thought, you know what you're opening the door to. I just, why did you do that? Where is he today?
He's a Republican. He wanted to retire. He wanted to retire under a Republican president.
Yeah.
So right. the defining moment of today was probably the moment when the father of one of the Parkland shooting victims.
Oh, right. I did see this.
Walked up to try and introduce himself to Kavanaugh. Kavanaugh failed this test. Like, I mean, yes, it's gimmicky on the one hand. Like, I get those criticisms and I would normally be more sympathetic to it. But Kavanaugh fucking failed, like, spectacularly in an awful way. Like, it could not have been staged.
The video is pretty damning. Yeah, the video is pretty damning.
I mean, yes, it was a stunt of sorts, but, like, you could not have planned this happening because Kavanaugh could, oh my God, F minus. So the father walks up, says, "Hi, I'm the father of a victim of the Parkland shooting. I want you to myself."
With his hand extended to shake.
And the goal is probably just to, like, get like a headline or two, like, you know, Parkland father says, like, remember, like, the victims of expansive Second Amendment interpretations. So it worked out way better than anyone could have expected for the. It was a stunt, I'm sure. Like, it was a planned photo opportunity. But what they planned was that moment of shaking hands and saying, please remember consequent. Or, you know, who knows what the line was going to be. What happened instead is that Kavanaugh just, like, looks at the guy, clearly hears who he is and what he's there for, and then, like,
gives this, pretty,
like,
carefully is listening, right?
Yeah, and just gives this, like, sneer of contempt, and then turns and walks away. Like, hand was, like, starting to extend, like, reflexively, then pulled back and walked away. And the photographers were, like, on it. They're like, oh, this is my time to shine. They got it. They got great images. The video is great. Like, yes, like every angle. It's a stunt, but, like, it is... I almost don't want to give it too much credit because it is artificial. It's a moment. It's a high stress moment where everyone's, I mean, he's obviously dealing with a lot right now, but like he failed it so
well,
badly.
I would say though, I would say that while the moment was contrived by this man, the reaction was pretty authentic. And, you know, I mean, of all the times you want to fake being nice, this might be it. But it was almost like he was just being himself.
He couldn't fake it.
He couldn't fake it.
I'm not trying to endorse, like, it's not, I don't think it's objectionable entirely necessarily, but, like, there's a lot of ways we use that are awkward and kind of unseemly. Like, imagine, like, one of the families that Trump's always touting who had family members killed by, like, immigrants says, like, Mr. Kavanaugh, please remember
Angel
that, like,
family.
You should execute, I'm not using that word, should execute the person who killed my daughter. Like, that would be kind of gross. But at the same time, like, what you expect is a nominee to have enough sense to, like, reach a hand out, shake, and says, thank you for participating in democracy. Thanks for being here. Walk away. Just fucking handshake. Polite, neutral, like, comment that, like...
Or just say nothing. Just return the handshake.
Give some, like, generic comment that talks to, like, you know, thanks for being here, being part of democracy. Walk away. And just the raw contempt this guy had was... I don't know if that's just, like... It could just be, like, in the moment he failed the test and that normally he's not that kind of guy.
You know what I think it is? He's not a politician. He's a judge. He's used to sneering at people and treating people with contempt is what I'm guessing.
It could be.
You know, judges consider a lot of other folks not, you know, I mean, like, they just don't consider them their equals in any way. And they aren't. People aren't. I mean, like, they're judges. And so I think it's kind of like a surgeon thing. I mean, apologies to surgeons, but you know what I mean? It becomes part of your personality where you don't maybe give the same kind of regard to just the average person that you should. And politicians are good at doing that. And this guy's no politician, but it was a really shitty moment for him today.
I don't support the politicization of the Supreme Court. I think that's a real threat to democracy as well. They shouldn't be politicians. They're not politicians in that role.
Right.
But at the same time, like, basic political skill, like, there's like a low threshold there of like how to like,
or just, I don't know, human decency. I mean, like, I'm that's my threshold.
Like, do you know this guy lost his like child recently? Like, it doesn't matter if you disagree whether they're talking to you. Like,
yeah,
I'd pass that test. I'd be a horrible politician.
yeah.
So
that's what it's about.
We'll see. Yeah. Anyway, TLDR, Kavanaugh will probably get confirmed, and we will suffer the consequences of that for the rest of our lifetimes. But it's not guaranteed. Nothing's done yet. It's still open. And there are, if there was not a chance to win here, the Republicans wouldn't be so desperate. In this case, given all the Republicans sacrificed to have this opportunity, they're going to keep fighting for it because they allowed Trump to happen. They endorsed Trump, supported Trump. They have signed on to his abuses of democracy and his undermining the rule of law for this moment. So stakes are high on all sides. But
I saw Lindsey Graham's comments, and I thought they were pretty disgusting, too.
Lindsey Graham
was like, you have to win. He's like, you want to appoint judges? You got to win.
He's a parasite. He takes on the tenor of whatever bigger or better politician he latches onto.
Yeah, he's pretty gross. All right. Okay, so we'll be back by next week. It could be a done deal.
I will not be back unless things are really, really, really terrible. So God willing, I will not be here next week.
Otherwise,
if I'm here next week, things have been awful.
It's been pretty bad. Yeah. Well, you enjoy your vacation. You know, hopefully you won't have to make an appearance and you can just enjoy the beach next week. Now, I just want to once again mention the passing of Aretha Franklin, an American icon, which was also dominating the news at the same time as the passing of Senator McCain, and maybe had a much more impact on a lot of people because, hello, it's Aretha. All right. So I'm just going to ask Aretha to take us home this week. Thanks so much for listening, guys.
Big thanks to all our listeners for tuning in to the 45th podcast week after week. And if you'd like to give us further support, you can do that by becoming a patron at patreon.com/45thpod. By doing so, you can become a supporter and patron for as little as $5 a month. And to do so, again, go to patreon.com/45thpod. A shout out and thank you to our sponsors. They make this program possible, and I urge our listeners to please check out our sponsors and use their products, and thank you to them for helping us produce week after week. Thank you to our audio producer Hannah McCarthy, our executive producer Meethal Thelhan, and you can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Our handle is at 45th pod. Our website is www.45thpod.com. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next week.